Hello and welcome to this Deloitte IFRS podcast. My name is Robert Bruce and I'm a financial journalist. The aim of these podcasts is to keep you up to date with IFRS developments and the challenges these may bring. With me today to discuss the new standard, IFRS 13, Fair Value Measurement, is Andrew Spooner, lead IFRS partner on financial instruments. Welcome, Andrew. But first, the customary disclaimer. I should stress that the views expressed in these podcasts represent personal views and are not necessarily the views of Deloitte. So, Andrew, what is the significance of this IFRS?
Thanks, Robert. IFRS 13, it's been a long time coming. It's been a joint project with the US FASB. It's been one of those items that have been on the both boards' memorandum of understanding. It originated out of a need for both boards to come up with a consistent standard for fair value measurement. And it's important to note this project only focuses on what is fair value, i.e. what fair value means and how to determine it, and also covers fair value disclosures. It was never intended to and doesn't provide any requirements as to what items and what transactions should be required to be measured at fair value. So it doesn't converge differences in the extent of fair value between IFRS and US GAAP. It's a standard that tells you how and not a standard that tells you when.
Some people are probably surprised that IFRS and US GAAP are currently different in this area. You'd think the fair value as an item was always the same under both accounting rules.
There are differences between fair value definitions under both standards. The definitions of fair value prior to this standard were not the same, although the overall thrust of fair value is very similar. In many cases, the outcome of applying the revised definition may be exactly the same as what we currently do under IFRS, although there may be some differences, and I expect to go through some of those differences during our discussion. It's not just, I suppose, the difference, though, between US GAAP and IFRS that is being removed, but it's also differences in the definition and application of fair value within each of the respective GAAPs. Now, there have always been differences because fair value has been one of those generic terms that has been used in IFRS and it's been used in many standards. The idea here is to have a common definition of fair value, and therefore whenever fair value is used within those standards, it means the same thing. I mean, on the face of it, it seems pretty reasonable that the definition of fair value should mean the same thing. Say, for example, if you're investing in an investment property, fair value should mean the same thing than if you're investing in a bond, for example. And the idea here is that they should have provide consistency effectively between the two gaps, but also consistency within the two gaps.
So let's summarise what does IFRS 13 set out to achieve, and what do people need to look out for?
Well, it does broadly three things. It defines fair value and then provides guidance on how to determine the fair value. And it also requires then disclosures about fair value. So it's pretty extensive. It extends beyond just assets and liabilities measured at fair value. It clearly includes those, but also includes items or transactions that are not necessarily measured at fair value on the balance sheet, but the specific requirements in IFRS may require them to be disclosed at fair value. So even if it's just a fair value disclosure, it would be subject to the standard. So it covers assets, it covers liability, it also covers equity instruments issued. So if an equity instrument is issued at fair value, it also gets captured as part of the standard. It pretty much applies to any reference to fair value in IFRSs. There are only a few exceptions. It doesn't apply to share-based payments in IFRS 2, nor leasing transactions in 17. And also, it distinguishes between measurements that are similar to fair value, but are not actually fair value. And an example of that is net realizable value in IS 2 or value in use in IS 36.
So, starting from the top, what is the definition of fair value? And does it differ from what we're currently used to?
It's quite a wordy definition, but it's intended to be comprehensive. Fair value is defined as the price that would be received to sell an asset or paid to transfer a liability. And that's in an orderly transaction in the principal or the most advantageous market at the measurement date, i.e. the reporting date. So it's an exit price. The definition stresses the market participant view, i.e. the view that I am transacting with a market participant in getting rid of an asset or getting rid of a liability. Now, of course, in many instances, markets aren't active, so they're not necessarily a population of market participants. And in many cases, what you're actually trying to do is create a kind of a hypothetical transaction at your reporting date and work out how much would it be for me to transfer that asset to somebody else or transfer that liability to somebody else at that date. Now, compared with current IFRSs, there are some differences. I mean, IFRS 13 is far clearer on what is the basis for valuing liabilities, for example. I mean, specifically financial liabilities. Under IAS 39, we used the concept of a settlement value. And what we meant by that was, well, what would be the price for me to settle the obligation with the counterparty? This is different because it doesn't use settlement value, it uses transfer value. So instead of thinking about how much I might pay the counterparty to give up the obligation, I think about how much I pay someone else to take on my obligation. And this was the concept that was used in FAS 157, now ASC 820 in US GAAP. So this transfer notion has been introduced. Now, this may result in differences under IFRS. So particularly in IAS 39, people may have determined settlement value on a slightly different basis to transfer value, and therefore on applying IFRS 13, they may get different valuations. Now, one of the arguments kind of against transfer value is, well, a lot of liabilities can't be transferred. But equally, the arguments for settlement value that we currently have on IAS 39, you might argue, are equally flawed because many financial liabilities can't be settled at the reporting date. You actually have to pay them in accordance with the terms, the conditions of the instruments, which can be set out in the future. So in a sense, they're no different in the sense we're trying to achieve a hypothetical transaction. But one of the advantages of using transfer value is that's the way we think about assets. So at least there's now some consistency between the transfer value used for assets and the transfer value used for liabilities. And in fact, the standard actually says that if an entity has an asset and they transfer it at a particular price, then you as the liability entity can value your liability based on the value that the counterparty has as an asset. So there is some consistency there. I mentioned before that the standard also covers equity instruments, and this transfer notion is also used for equity instruments. So if you were to issue equity instruments, say, to buy a business, and you were to use fair value, you'd similarly use this transfer notion. Now, there's one other thing which is kind of worth stressing, that the standard doesn't give you huge amounts of detail, I suppose, about how to work out fair value, because ultimately it's what a market participant would do. There are three methods which they do highlight, which are probably worth stressing, and this is when you do your valuation technique. And they say you can use a market approach, which is, well, let's look at the market and see what prices are in the market for my particular item. An income approach, which is, well, let's work out the cash flows from it and present value them back, which is obviously a technique people are already very familiar with. And a cost approach, which is, well, it's very much like current replacement cost and what would be the cost to replace this asset.
The concept of fair value as an exit price is something that those familiar with financial instruments will understand well. But how does this work for non-financial items?
You're right, the standard does apply to both. So the scope of IFRS 13 covers financials and non-financials. The definition is also the same. So on the face of it, you know, the principles are applied consistently. I mean, the differences really lie in the application. For non-financial assets only, the standard requires that a market participant, what a market participant could do with that asset that maximizes the value of their asset. So that's how you work out fair value. And they refer to this as highest and best use. Now, the highest and best use might be using the assets on its own, or it might be using with other assets, say in a business. Now, determining highest and best use with complementary assets or liabilities is fine if market participants would also do that. Now, if you have a situation where you use the asset differently from what the market participant would do, then you value it on the highest amount. Now, if there is a difference and perhaps you choose to use an asset on its own when it could be used at a greater value with complementary assets, then there is obviously a difference between how you're valuing and how you're using them. And in that case, the standard actually specifically requires that you disclose that fact.
You mentioned that the standard also deals with disclosure, as well as items actually measured at fair value. Are the disclosures different to the current requirements?
In some areas they are, although in other areas the disclosures are very, very similar to what we currently do in IFRS. I mean, I think if I was to generalise, I'd say the disclosures in respect to financial instruments are very similar to what we currently do under IFRS 7. And those familiar with IFRS 7 will know that over recent years, the amount of disclosure with respect to fair value has increased. And really that has been kind of carried forward into this standard. However, those disclosures are now equally being applied not just to financial instruments, but to non-financial instruments. So in my generalization, I'd say the biggest difference would be the increase in the amount of disclosures associated with those non-financial items that are measured at fair value. Now, the way we kind of work out how much disclosure is going to be required under the new standard depends whether the item you're looking at is a recurring or non-recurring fair value. And what I mean by this is a recurring fair value is something that is measured at fair value and after initial recognition, it continues to be measured at fair value at the reporting date. So an example would be maybe a held for trading item in IAS 39 or IFRS 9. So it's remeasured every reporting date at fair value. A non-recurring fair value is something that is measured at fair value after its initial recognition, but it's not measured all the time. And an example would be if you had a disposal group, discontinued operations under IFRS 5. Now, the extent of disclosures depends whether you have one of these recurring fair values, a non-recurring fair value, or in fact whether you just have a disclosure where actually it's not measured on the balance sheet at fair value at all, but it needs to be disclosed. Now, the disclosures are a bit of a shopping list, and I'll try and summarise them. They're very extensive, and as I said before, some of this will be familiar to those familiar to IFRS 7. Now, what it does require you, in all cases, you have to disclose the fair value of the reporting date in the disclosures. Now, for recurring and non-recurring subsequent measurement at fair value, you also need to say what level in the fair value hierarchy. And this is the same as in IFRS 7. We have these levels 1, 2, and 3, with level 1 being the most kind of observable fair value and level 3 being the most unobservable fair value. Similarly, for these recurring and non-recurring fair values, if there have been transfers between levels 2 and 3 for recurring fair values, you need to explain them. If you have things in the level 2 and level 3 category, you need to describe what valuation technique you use. For level 3 items, there's lots of disclosure. You have to disclose really quantitative information about significant unobservable inputs. You also have to describe what valuation techniques you use. And in the case of recurring fair values that are level 3, you have to do this level 3 reconciliation, which is really reconciling the opening value to the closing value. And that is pretty extensive. And currently that's required under IFRS 7 for financial instruments, but that would now be extended to a recurring fair value, say for a non-financial item. Now, that we kind of focused on those recurring and non-recurring fair values, but even if you're having to fair value something simply for disclosure purposes, you still have to do more disclosure about that. In fact, you need to disclose the level, once again, level 1, 2, and 3, and also the valuation techniques for those things that are in levels 2 and 3. So there are, you know, pretty extensive disclosures right across the board.
Are there any other differences with current international financial reporting standards that are of note?
There were kind of small differences, and I think there were also minor differences in languages, and I'm not convinced that some of the language differences are really going to actually mean much in practice. I mean, one of the, I suppose, more significant differences is if we compare where IFRS 13 is with IFRS 39 on an issue which is specifically to do with bid and ask prices. And what I mean by this is under IFRS 39, if you have an asset, you record it at bid price. If you have a liability, you record it at ask or offer price. And when you have a match position, you kind of net the two down and just value the open position. Now, IFRS 13 simplifies this. It doesn't require bid for assets and ask for liabilities. They are permitted, but they are not required. Also, as a practical expedient, mid-market prices or other pricing conventions that are used by market participants can also be used. So that is a simplification. They also provide more guidance on instances where, say, you have an asset and a liability and your business manages them on a net basis. And it allows you to have an exception and, in fact, value the portfolio or value the net portfolio on a consistent basis. And this is required. Well, in fact, it's a choice if the entity manages it on a net basis and you have offsetting risks. Now, this is relating to offsetting market risks or offsetting counterparty credit risk. An example that is very common is, say, if I had a derivative asset with you and I also had a derivative liability with you. Now, we've with the same counterparty, and we've also got a master netting agreement, says if one of us fails to pay, we'll just pay each other the difference, the net amount. Now, in that instance, rather than value the credit risk for each individual transaction, I'd net the two down, work out the open exposure between the two of us, and then just do an adjustment on that. Now, we kind of refer to this as unit of valuation, because the unit of account is two separate instruments, but the way we do the valuation is based on a portfolio basis. Now, when I apply my adjustment, my credit risk adjustment, my often referred to as a CVA or a DVA, when we put that adjustment on, that goes onto the balance sheet. And what we do is kind of allocate that to the respective asset and liabilities. So we're actually doing kind of portfolio adjustments, even though the unit of account may not be a portfolio.
Okay, when will entities need to apply this? What's the effective date?
Well, they'll need to apply it prospectively, so it's not a retrospective application, but it's prospective and it's effective for annual periods beginning on or after the 1st of January 2013, so not so far away. Also, like it's traditional with IFRS's, entities that wish to early apply can do so.
Excellent. Well, that's all we have time for today. Thank you very much indeed, Andrew. Please look out for more Deloitte IFRS podcasts as they become available over the coming weeks. They are available on iasplus.com and also iTunes, where you can press the subscribe button and have them automatically downloaded when new podcasts become available. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.